Welcome to episode 203 of Conversation Street, the only podcast about Coronation Street, as far as we know. I'm Gemma.
I'm Michael.
And we're talking about Coronation Street, broadcast in the UK between the 6th and 8th of June 2016, which isn't very much. It was only three episodes
over 3 days. But
we're still doing our podcast on Friday.
Yeah, we like, should we do it?
Got things should we do
it
to when,
do. Should we do it today? No, should we do it today? No, we just end up doing it on a normal day.
Well, it's deadline week again.
Yes. And
yeah, and school fair and
I had the school fete today. Yeah, I was working on the barbecue. Not cooking things on it, of course.
Of course not.
I don't know how to do that. I was in charge of the money in my school fete today.
When you're watching other people cook, do you think, yes, it all looks so simple? Or do you think...
It looks pretty simple, just poking that sausage. But not for me.
It's beyond you, isn't it? Well, that's enough about what we did. We went to Polo on Sunday.
Oh, yes, we went to Polo in London last Sunday. That was a nice experience.
It's posh.
Yeah.
So many posh people everywhere.
We got some free tickets. And
don't tell them that.
We watched the Chuckers.
I got to know that we are got our finger on the pulse. Not plebs getting freebies.
Yeah, so that was our most exciting things that happened this week. We also went to a funeral. But anyway.
Oh, we went to a funeral.
Yeah, we went to a funeral. Yeah. That's so exciting.
So many funerals this year. It's like the social event of the year. I just lose track.
Mm. So
anyway, about Corrie history.
55 years ago, Ken discovered that the woman that he was seeing, Marion Lund, had got engaged to someone else.
What?
I don't know. Why would you dump Ken for someone else?
Just think. He must have been loaded or something. If he had married Marion Lund, she might have been the making of him.
I know.
She might have been like, you know what, Ken, should we just get out of this dump? Go somewhere else. 50 years since Lucille Hewitt, Irma Barlow and Sheila Birtles started working at the PVC factory as welders. Oh, I thought they were making sexy tights.
Mm.
Out of PVC and stuff, you know, no. Sexy undies. And
dominatrix gear.
That could be Underworld's latest range.
I think they made raincoats. They didn't have sexy things.
What, welding
things in
raincoats? In the 60s. Is that what you do with them?
Yeah, I think that's just what's called joining the PVC bits. I don't know. Either that or they were
you
sitting
really
on the girders welding them together.
Thought of a different word. But 35 years since Rita and Len decided to adopt a child.
Yes, but they didn't adopt in the end.
Don't do that.
They couldn't for some reason. They fostered.
Don't adopt children. There must be a reason they got rejected in the first place.
Yeah, I can't remember why.
Obviously
they...
awful.
I can't remember why they couldn't adopt in the end.
Reject child.
Yeah, so they ended up adopting Sharon Gaskill in, you know, the other one.
Yeah, messed about her, the better. 20 years since Vicky McDonald left the street.
Yeah, Steve's first wife. He did something wrong and she buggered off, basically.
Her and she didn't like it.
Yeah, and that was the end of Vicky on the street. I think she came back as a few, one-off episodes here and there, but yeah, that was at the end of that, 20 years ago. Right, so that is what's happened. Let's get on to talking about what happened in this week's Coronation Street.
Okay.
In Street Talk.
Street Talk time. Only three episodes, but we had five things that happened. And I just know that all of this, because of the football, all of the episodes are going to be out of order and played in giant batches, and then it's going to mess up, because normally they like to have, like, say, two main storylines and, like, three sub-storylines in a week, don't they? But yeah. Once they start messing around with the order of things and moving stuff about, it ends up, like, one week you got seven storylines, one week you got three storylines.
Yeah, well, this week there were havoc. It was two main ones and three little ones still, I suppose. But and some of them like this, the last one here is they only had about one scene of it.
See?
We're gonna start off with
messing around
the Callum uncovered stuff and all the Billy and Todd getting much closer this week.
Can I just say, if there's one thing Coronation Street viewers like, it's knowing where they are with things and not having unexpected stuff happen.
Like what?
Like. Having more than five storylines in a week, or not really? Having it on a Wednesday, or having an hour-long one on a Sunday.
You've got to be in your bonnet about this. I will keep you informed, Gemma, and we will keep our lovely listeners
aghast.
Informed about when Coronation Street's happening.
Coronation Street is not known for innovation, so why start now?
It's innovation to not have an episode when there's football on, is it?
Yeah.
And I was right, Gemma, it is the Euros. You didn't believe me that it was the Euros starting, or that was even a thing last week. And it is. Do you concede?
I just, do you know what it is? It's just, it sounds foreign coming out of your mouth. Even now you're saying the Euros, and it just doesn't really sound like you know what you mean.
The Euro football tournament.
The Euros football.
Two countries played against each other today.
Two different countries, and we...
One of them won.
Just enjoy it while it lasts, okay? Because when we're out of the EU, we won't be allowed to play football in Europe anymore.
Yeah.
None of us will be allowed.
When's that? Is that 2 weeks' 23rd,
time? 23rd, maybe, I don't know.
What are we talking about after Callum Uncovered, Gemma?
Third wheel will. You tried to trick me with that one, but I read it. Fine.
We then had a little bit more of the Connor Goner storyline, which is our Carla leaving and what a hole she has left on the street. And a bit of lovely Leanne as well back there.
Oh, I love
too.
Leanne.
Tinker and Hooch is our next storyline.
Love that
which
film.
Which is... I don't know if I've even seen it, but it's got a dog as one of the two main characters. I'm not surprised.
It was one of those Hollywood came up with two different films about the same thing. Because you had Turner and Hooch and you had K-9. And in one of them, the dog dies at the end. And I can't never remember which one it is.
Oh, no spoilers.
Oh, spoiler alert. It's from the 80s.
Is Tom Hanks Turner and Hooch?
Tom Hanks played the dog, yeah.
No, was he the man? Was he Turner?
I can't remember which. There was two different ones, like I said, and I can't remember.
Oh, I don't know. Anyway, this is a storyline of Craig and his and Steve and Tim and their home brewing adventures.
Oh, spoilers! Now you're doing
it. But
there
was trouble a brewing.
Oh no! And finally, High Roller. Good old
about
Izzy.
One scene or so.
Don't forget about her,
yes.
Please.
So, Sarah is feeling a bit worse to wear on Monday first, isn't
this is
she?
The
after
flat stuff.
Yeah, the Bethany's party. She'd been saying
crying.
That Todd was the best boyfriend that she'd ever had, and she can tell him everything. And Billy and Todd are kind of... They can't decide what... I think we were left on Friday, weren't we, with Todd saying, well, I don't know what I'm going to do about knowing that Sarah killed Callum, or because that's what he thinks. And Billy was like, oh, you sort it out. And he's still saying, similar on Monday, saying, look, you've got to do what's right. And that seems to be going to tell the police. So, it looks like that Todd's going to drop Sarah in it at this point. Billy tries to go and bring Sarah to church later on. I think he's trying to say, oh look, there's a confession booth, anything to say?
No.
Or was he trying to say, get her to claim sanctuary when the police come and arrest her?
He was trying to comfort her in the only way he knew how, I think. Gave her a hug and stuff. He said, oh, you might find it peaceful, but she said, not really, thanks though.
Yeah.
Obviously he looked guilty of sin, but she couldn't really tell.
But she needn't be worrying, neither had Billy, because Todd, spoiler, Todd has come up with a master plan, one that we kind of said would happen, and that is that it weren't Sarah, it were Tony.
So he goes and tells the coppers just that.
Yeah.
He says, Tony told me the night it happened, I was in the Rovers, and he came up to me and said he killed Callum and torched his car. No, hang on, he actually said he torched his car, and I said that was mad, and Tony laughed and said... Callum's not coming after anyone anymore because he's dead and I just killed him. And I said, what?
No, you didn't. Read those letters, Gemma. I asked and he said I was better off not knowing.
Okay, all
Please
right.
Please ask if he believed him and he said, I don't know, but then the body turned up. The police say it's very convenient. And why didn't you come sooner? Yeah, because if Todd knew all this all along. And we were saying last week, weren't we, that if Todd was going to say about this torch car business... He really needs to say that he was there, otherwise the police wouldn't necessarily believe him. But, you know, they seem to have fallen for it.
A line and sinker.
Yeah.
He says, I was worried about being implicated, so I didn't. And I'm a coward.
Yeah, he was calling himself a coward, basically, to try and make himself
look
stupid. Yeah, I know.
That's what I said to you about lying.
Make yourself look stupid.
Say a lie that makes you look worse, not one that makes you look good.
Yeah. So Todd then goes back home to tell everybody this, and... Jason is enjoying a cup of Chateau Vimto from Eileen.
A cup of hot Vimto. And do you know what is interesting about that? Although I don't think it's Ramadan on Monday, but it is definitely Ramadan now. And did you know that sales of Vimto spike during Ramadan because they sell loads to Muslim countries? Because apparently they freaking love Vimto at Ramadan. They have it for their nightly feast because it's super sweet and they've got a sweet tooth.
Isn't that an interesting fact? That is an interesting fact. Anyway, Todd tells everybody that Tony killed Callum, and Billy's like, what? That's not what you said you were going to say.
Jason is not happy about it either.
He doesn't take this news well, does he, of course?
No, because although Todd expects him, Todd seems to expect him to say, oh, thanks, bro, you saved me from...
Oh, well, he's dead now.
...implicated in a murder by smearing my dead father's name. Well,
that's why Todd was doing it, wasn't it? To prevent...
Jason and Sarah.
Jason's the one that's in the spotlight at that
point. The only way he could really have gotten Jason out of it was by saying Sarah said she did it, and he didn't want to do that.
No. So I don't know whether he'd considered just how badly Jason would react to this. And even Eileen is not completely convinced by it, isn't she? She said, look, if the police think you're lying, then you're in big trouble, basically.
I mean, it is very convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that the police were having doubts about this sudden revelation.
I think if I was Eileen, I'd be like, Todd, what are you up to now?
Mm.
But I mean, really, Todd should have just said to the police, look, to be honest, I didn't care. I didn't like Callum. I was glad he was dead. I don't know why he didn't say it. I didn't really believe Tony anyway. But as time went on, I got more suspicious of the fact that Tony wasn't around. And by that point, Callum. And by that point, it was a bit late, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then when Tony died, I thought, what's the point of saying anything? And now the body's been dug up and you're trying to get my brother and saying he did it. Of course I'm going to come forward and say something.
I think...
The police are just being...
It's not a surprise that they're suspicious, but I think Todd's story and reasoning for not coming forward holds water.
I felt like they were playing it a bit like, the police might not believe him here.
Mm.
Because really, I think Todd could, if Todd was really doing this, he could have done a much better job of selling this idea to the cops than he did.
Mm. Now, what I did enjoy seeing was when Todd then went over to David across the road later on, and he's like, yeah, just been going to the police, I know who did this. And David's kind of probably bricking it at this point.
Well, Sarah's sitting there too, looking guilty.
Yeah, and Todd's like, yeah, Tony did it. And David's just like, what? David's probably thinking, why the heck did I not think of that myself? He probably went whipped himself to chastise himself for not coming up with such a obvious master plan. And I think he's losing it.
I think so too.
But he also says, I think you know my brother's innocent, David, in not so many words, saying, I'm getting Sarah out of this here. But obviously... I don't think David understands that. He then knows that Sarah has spoken to Todd, but he still doesn't know exactly what Sarah told him. So he goes home demanding to Sarah, well, what have you been saying to Todd? And Sarah, basically they just come to the decision that who cares? Tony's in the frame now, we're safe.
Kylie doesn't agree because she's the most honest one
of them all.
We did it. It wasn't him. And the police are going to see this as obvious. And David says, shut up. This is as good as it's going to get.
Mm. I think Sarah's just probably saying that initially because of the initial relief. No, Sarah, because it's off of her. I think Kylie and Sarah are both
normally
feeling relatively honest about this. And they want to confess.
Rubbish.
But... Yeah, David thinks, well, this is the best chance we've got of getting away with this scot-free.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, go along with it. Dead man, tell no tales, so exactly. Let's implicate him.
It's not like he was sin-free anyway.
Mm.
So anyway, Billy gets some time alone at home with Todd and starts going off at him saying, this is wrong, why did you do this? I've got to go and tell the police the truth. And Todd says, if you do, I will just deny it. Sean comes in, and then we start this story this little plot line that they've been brewing for a while, where Sean starts to suspect that something's going on between Billy and Todd.
Have you felt sorry for Sean this week?
Yeah, I think. I really do you know have. What? Billy's being a bit of a prick.
He should have said all of his secrets that he's had. I know that Sean isn't the one that doesn't always keep his mouth closed. But he should have said something because he's got this, he's got as his little secret. He's got Lee as his little secret.
He should have told him about Lee. There's no reason not to tell him about Lee.
I mean, yeah, having a brother who's a druggie, I mean...
Who cares? Everyone's got a brother who's a drug addict. I've got five brothers who are drug addicts.
Yeah,
I'm
not,
I'm an only child, everybody.
I think that Sean's really hard done by. And I know that I've been reading on the internet a lot of people saying that Billy and Sean aren't really suited as a couple. I think they were.
Oh, I like them together.
I think they're great as a couple. But I do it's think, a bit sad that this is happening to them.
I think that Billy doesn't value Sean very much. He just needs to throw him a bone here and give him Lee as the secret, and he wouldn't even suspect that Billy had another secret.
I mean, he's kind of chastising Sean for being suspicious, but he's got every right to be, really.
Yeah.
Poor old Sean.
So, on Wednesday, Billy's trying to make up to Sean, but he doesn't really want to. He's kind of a bit lukewarm
about
it.
Too late.
And the police come in to ask Todd some more questions, and they ask him, why didn't you come forward sooner? And he says, I didn't want to put myself in danger.
The police officer here was being a little over-dramatic with her reading of lines, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was hamming it up like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, she was like, I want to be on this soap. Inspector Clouseau or something.
I want to be the cop that's always in the show.
Maybe Tony looked out for you. Maybe Callum beat Jason up and they were both obsessed and they wanted revenge. Maybe. It wasn't a particularly straight interview, was it?
It's not. Normally the cops are like super straight-edged, like robot police. And usually it's like these cold-hearted policemen.
Yeah, there's never kind of likeable policemen in the show, are there?
I would love it if they brought in a police person as a, not like Kirsty, but like as like a likeable police character that's only in there to try to win over a character and get them to confess.
Oh, yeah. It's all bad cop at Weatherfield Cop Shop,
isn't it? Pretty much. Bad cop, worst cop.
So, Eileen is also later that episode starting to wonder whether maybe it was Tony, because she obviously knows a lot more about his dodgy dealings in the past than Jason does. And Eileen says, look, he loved you and he did say that he'd get Callum back after he beat you up, and Jason doesn't want to
So Todd and Billy catch up again, and Billy says, your plan is stupid. And Todd says, no. I reckon Eileen's coming round and she's going to convince Jason. And then Billy gets all disgusted and as he should
morally
be,
outraged.
Holier than thou, and starts saying, you're smearing a dead man. I can't believe you're forcing me to cover up a murder. And Todd's like, well, it's the only solution, isn't it? And if you say anything, you're going to get Sarah in trouble. Really, this is such a massive dilemma for Billy, and I'm kind of annoyed that we haven't really got anyone for him to talk to about it. Because
could they have a scene of him like praying?
It would have to be I hate those soliloquies.
Out loud prayer, kneeling against his
bed.
Are
you there, God? It's me, Billy.
They could do, couldn't they?
Yeah, I guess. But I would find it so cringy. But I would love to see Billy's kind of like, what am I supposed to do? What would Jesus do in this situation? Jesus would be like, oh dear.
He'd be all right. He'd just go and raise the dead. He'd bring Callum back to life and it would be...
Yeah, but then Callum would go, it was Kylie and Sarah and David, and they'd all get in trouble and then there'd be orphans all over the place.
Maybe Billy can go and do a confession to the bishop. Can they do that? Can vicars have a confession with somebody else? Yeah, I've got something to confess. It's like, I know you're gay. We had this storyline last
fine,
year.
It's fine, I don't
I've
care.
I've come to terms with it now, I suppose.
Just don't flaunt him in front of me.
Yeah, but I'd like to see even more of the theological kind of turmoil that Billy's...
I want to see saying, him leafing saying, through the Bible going, there's no reference here for me.
Yeah, I can't base this on anything. Yeah, because he's saying it's wrong, it's morally wrong and everything, but almost in the same way that any kind of good-hearted person might do.
What does it say in the Bible about lying?
Well, it's one of the commandments, isn't it? Thou shalt bear no false witness or something like that.
Is that one of the commandments?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Exodus 20.
Is it really?
Yes.
Thou shalt not lie?
I think so. Or better,
is it not lie with other men?
No, that's not even in the Ten Commandments.
That's
like
fine.
Over Billy.
Be you. No, but I don't... I mean, it's the lesser of two evils, isn't it?
He is caught between a rock and a hard place.
And he really can't say anything because he's bound under the confession to not say anything. Mm. And really, is it up to him to do anything about what Todd's getting up to? The only way he can stop Todd is by breaking his vicarly vow. So I don't think he's allowed to.
No, I think he's. I think he said as much. He's. Yeah, this is why it's probably such a problem for him.
If somebody was carrying on committing a crime, he still couldn't stop them either. If somebody came to him and said, "Oh, I want to confess, I beat my wife up and I feel really bad about it," he wouldn't be able to do anything about it, I don't think.
I don't know.
No, I don't think you're allowed to.
And just really try and persuade him
not to. I'm going to have to quite strenuously ask you to seriously think about perhaps not doing that again.
Mm. Well, when you have the confession, like he'd like say, "Oh, if you truly feel sorry, God forgives you," and,
yeah.
And he kind of hopes that that's going to make him think, "Oh, maybe I'll start doing it."
Just give them the double thumbs up.
So Sean and Billy then go in. They kind of make up for it, but over lunch, don't they? It's like, okay, this is going bad. This is going all right, but oh no. Billy gets a phone call because Todd has just found Lee unconscious in the ginnel. And what is going on with this whole storyline? Because how long has Lee been in it? Like a month and a half? It seems like forever now that nothing's really happened. I don't understand why Lee is such a, you know, why Billy can't have anything to do with him. He always seems to have sort of got rid of him from his life, hasn't he? Like, I don't want anything to do with you. Why?
You can't wash your hands of your brother.
No.
If you're a vicar and he's in need,
but that's
what
it seems that he's done. I mean, has Lee done something so terrible, or is it that Billy's done something terrible, like we said before?
I would hope that this is just an addict storyline, and I think it is kind of important for people to realise that if somebody is an addict, really, there is nothing you can do. You can't help them. You can take them to therapy, you can take them to rehab, you can tell them you love them, you can support them, and you can, you know, tell them it's hurting me, don't do that anymore, but you can't stop them from doing it. They can't even stop themselves.
It still just make me wonder, like, why is he being so secretive about it, though? I was a bit like, oh, here we go again, is Lee, but in the end, I was a bit disappointed when they carted him off to hospital then, and we didn't see him in hospital, we didn't find out any... So what happened then? They just dump him on the doorstep and do a runner or something.
That makes me think that this was written as a 5-episode week, and we would... So maybe the next episode we have will be
the conclusion of this story.
So I honestly think that they must write them in 5-episode...
I think that next episode is supposed to be on Sunday because they've I can't remember what I know from the show and what I know from previews I've looked at. We'll see anyway. We'll find out soon enough.
Well,
you
cheat,
won't we?
So what can I say?
Anyway, yeah. So Billy's abandoned Sean to go and
help, I would be peed off if I was Sean.
And,
I've never known anyone have so many emergencies as this man.
Yeah, Billy.
I mean, really,
comes with territory, does it?
Is it really not possible for him to turn his phone off for an hour?
Well, you could say that about all living people on Coronation Street. Nobody in Coronation Street has their phone on silent. It's just not done, even though that's what I think people do in real life, do they? Most people have their phone on silent. I don't know, we do, don't we? My uncle at the funeral the other day... And it was my granddad's funeral. He died a few weeks ago, and my uncle, who's the son, obviously, his phone went off twice, was it, during the funeral? And he's a bit of a Luddite, and he didn't really know what to do with it.
He tried to turn it off,
and he's got this really old style phone that when you turn it off, it then plays a little jingly tune. And my aunt was giving them the real evils from the other side of the pew. My dad was just sitting next to him, and he was just having a chuckle about it, wasn't he?
Funerals are fine. Like, a lot of people get worried about inappropriate behaviour at a funeral, but really, anything goes, as long as you're not being totally disrespectful.
Yeah, and I think
it's so many different emotions go through you at a funeral.
It lightens the mood a bit.
It's totally fine to... Like, I remember my Nan's second husband's funeral, where he played "I Did It My Way" at the end, and my mum burst into hysterical laughter, and it was just all the emotion of the day, but luckily it looked like she was crying. But it was just it's overwhelming, isn't it? It's overwhelming, and crazy things happen.
I don't think that the general mood of Grandad's funeral was really, really sad, was it? It makes us feel really heartless. But
he had a really good life.
Yeah, he was 93, and also with everything, obviously with Mum dying a couple of months ago, Granddad, it pales
a little bit punch drunk at that point.
Yeah.
As far as deaths were going.
anyway, that's another tragic life. So I hope I don't die next, life.
Otherwise you won't give a crap, will you? We'll probably turn up.
Yeah. So, Gemma, just being a sheep now. Anyway, the storyline ends on Wednesday with, obviously, Todd and Billy sharing a friendly hug, and then who should be there around the corner but Sean, and oh my gosh, boyfriend is having a...
skipped out a load of stuff here. Billy takes Lee to the hospital. All right, and then they have a... Yeah,
they have a hug, and Billy... He makes some kind of comment, doesn't he? Says the ultimate justice in the end comes from God.
Shut up, you're saying it all wrong. Yeah. They're hugging, but they're kind of hugging in like a... Todd is saying... Basically, Todd's underlying... Well, he doesn't come out and say it is, I just did you a solid, mate, so maybe have my back on the whole Callum thing, won't you?
Yeah.
And Billy's like, you know, well, only God can judge you, so, what, you know...
Mm.
So neither of them are really agreeing to disagree, but...
So what do you think Billy's next move is going to be? Is he going to keep quiet about it all?
It will be mysterious phone calls and strange leaving in the middle of the night for Lee, who's probably worse for wear in the hospital, and he needs to visit him, and he makes excuses, and then Sean wonders where he's going, and then Todd starts making excuses, and...
Mm. So is Tony going to go down for this in the end now, do you think?
I think so.
Yeah. I wonder whether...
I don't think...
I wonder whether Billy's going to get Sarah in some kind of confessional situation, and then finally she's going to say, oh, I didn't do it. Sorry.
You got
the wrong end of the stick here. It was
it's kind of all along.
Yeah.
No, I think there will be no police justice for this, but I do think it will come out.
Yeah.
Some people are going to find out.
Well, if you've...
More Kylie's, people are going to find out.
Whatever happens, Kylie's going to live with the guilt of this forever, isn't she? And Sarah is going to live with the guilt of covering it up forever. And I'm sure some of this guilt is going to come through these conversations that she has with Billy. But I don't think Sarah or David are going to go down for this. Kylie, possibly, but not for a while, at least. Anyway.
I don't see how Kylie can get in trouble without implicating David and Sarah. Anyway.
Doesn't
matter.
No.
Let's move on. What's this storyline?
Third wheel. It's a tongue twister, that.
Really, Willy Will.
With Steve and Michelle, the victim, Connor.
Oh, professional victim, Connor. Yeah, the Connor family good at being victims, aren't they? What a bunch of knobs.
Steve is still trying to encourage Amy to go back and live with her mum. I think that they've made Steve do this just to cause conflict between him and Michelle, because really, I don't think that Steve would be that desperate to get rid of Amy.
And he thinks she's much better off with him than she is with Tracy.
Yeah.
You're right, this is just a story contrivance.
I thought it was all maybe he wants a bit of nookie with Michelle, but he really doesn't at the moment. I think that's the last thing on his mind at the moment. So it's all a bit weird.
He's trying to encourage Amy to go back, but Michelle's like, oh, I'm the cool step mum. Oh, well,
because Amy's
go.
Blackmailing her, of isn't course. It? Yeah.
Amy says to her, I'd hate for him to find out about Will. And then she comes home from school because she says she's depressed, and she is walking all over Steve and Michelle.
Yeah, she plays a depressed card because she know it works for her dad.
Yeah, and she says she's depressed because Sam has dumped her and she hates all men. And then she says, oh, I'm just like my mum, aren't I? And then she starts talking about everyone who lies all the time. And Steve comes in and tells her off. And she says, oh, maybe I've got a good reason to be sad. Mm-hmm. And she stares at Michelle.
So we just blazed past the breakup of the couple of the century, Amy and Sam.
These were like for my best new couple of 2016.
I think, sadly, Sam has been cast aside thanks to Beverly Callard going off.
Yeah,
because this storyline, obviously...
Victim of circumstance.
Yeah. I don't know whether Sam and old Silver Fox are going to come back when...
I hope so.
...when Liz is back in the show or what, because there was certainly unfinished business there. And I also want to know, does... Like, whether or not Amy was going to... Or people were going to find out that Liz is Amy's grandma and not her mum, surely after 2 months of Amy and Sam going out, she couldn't have kept that a secret for 2 whole months. I know that we know why it's not been on screen, but don't you think you can't go out with someone, I know they're only 13 or whatever, without revealing who your mum is. So I think if Sam does come back and then it comes out that Liz is the grandma and probably old Silver Fox guy is the granddad, it's like... Right, Michael, taking you 3 months to realise this.
They're not trying to lie to the children. It doesn't matter if the children know. The parents are lying to each other.
Yeah, but
Liz and Silver Fox are lying to one another. They don't give a crap if the children know.
But Amy still thinks that old Silver Fox is... Oh, sorry, I can't remember his name at all. Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
This is, you're building this whole drama out of nothing because it doesn't matter. The funny part of the storyline is that Liz... All we really know is Liz is pretending to be Amy's mum. We literally don't know whether this guy is really his granddad or his dad. We've just assumed because he's old, because we're like ageist or something, that he must be the granddad. And wouldn't it be funny if it turned out that they were both the grandparents and lying to each other to try to make themselves seem younger? But really, at the end of the day, it's they're only lying to each other and not lying to Sam and Amy. Mm. Sam and Amy don't care. In fact, Amy would be thrilled if she found out, because she tried to blackmail him as well, yeah, get money out of him.
That's true. Anyway, okay, sorry about that little diversion then.
Well, she's... Michelle is saying... Well, Steve comes in and Michelle is saying that Amy's upset. And Amy says, don't tell him about Sam. I don't want him to know. And Michelle goes, I wouldn't tell him because it was a private conversation and we don't tell people about private conversations. And Amy's like, you know, you can't win this one. Why don't you tell him about Will? And Michelle's like, no, that's just another boy at your school, isn't it, Amy? And, yeah, so she goes, Amy skulks off and Michelle joins her and says, I'm sorry about that. And they kind of make up with each other.
Who does that? Michelle and Steve. I don't remember.
Amy.
Much of what
Michelle
happened.
And Amy make up with each other, and Amy's saying, "Oh, do you hate me?" Yeah, and Michelle's like, "No, I love you, and I love your dad." And Amy says, "What's going on with Will then?" She says, "Oh, it's my first proper boyfriend, but I don't fancy him. But if Steve found out, he'd be worried and upset, and I don't want him to be worried for no reason, right?"
Yeah.
And it all seems like it's fine.
Michelle and Will were 14, weren't they, when they went out? And Amy must be
getting on that.
Yeah, getting on. I don't think she's quite that, but I guess she can kind of understand, because, you know.
Whatever.
Anyway,
so, it seems all
Saskia
like it's all
Saskia comes
finished.
In, doesn't
oh,
she?
Oh no,
at the
Saskia's
end of it.
Here.
I honestly thought we'd seen the last of her. She storms into the back room of the Rovers with Will behind her, and Saskia then accuses Michelle of having an affair, and Steve is looking utterly baffled by this. She is saying, "Oh, you slept with."
She's basically
with my
going, "You
fiance.
Seduced my fiance
when your job was to organise our wedding."
And then at one point she says, "Oh, do you want your money back?" And Saskia's like, "Yeah, give me my damn money back." I thought that was awesome.
And
anyway,
Will as well is backing
up there.
Saskia's version of
what
events.
A toe rag he is. He's obviously just told her what makes him look better. And she's fallen for it, hook, line and sinker. Because honestly, without being disrespectful to Michelle, she does look like the sort of person who would go around stealing other people's men.
He said, not Kim Marsh.
Not Kim Marsh. It's the way they do her makeup, I tell you, it's that eyeliner, okay?
But Gemma,
that
she's
the
victim. She's the victim.
She wears the eyeliner of a tramp.
Anyway, Michelle admits that something did happen between her and Will, but they didn't go all the way.
It
although
was
Will
only
wanted to.
A light.
Light fondling on the
fondling.
Bed.
Fondling. I only went there with a dress that had no back on it.
Will and Saskia don't stay there for long, do they? Because
she didn't wear a bra.
She's livid
for sure.
with Will, and then Michelle is sobbing this apology to Steve
Pathetic.
Afterwards. He's not having any of this. She says, "Oh, Steve, we're in love." It's liar.
Liar. Now,
some people I've seen online are saying, "Look, Steve has had his fair share of affairs on one night stands and everything in the past," and it is absolutely true, and I think he's cheated on Michelle as well with Becky even in the past, but it doesn't mean that it's
well,
fine
look,
and everyone
okay.
can do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a boxer and your job is to hit people all day and someone slaps you on the face, it's still going to hurt, okay?
Exactly.
Okay, that is a message.
Michelle shouldn't have done it, and I'm completely on Steve's side with this, and the fact that she got up to the bed, and just because she pulled away at the last moment.
She only pulled away because she saw a picture of them.
Exactly.
If he had had the good sense to have got rid of the photos in his bedroom, or just like us have no photos,
yeah,
would
she'd have
been
had
fine.
That, had those clothes off in a.
She would have been naked the day she was born.
Yep. Anyway,
The thing is, though, for most of Monday's episode, Steve really plays this in a very comedic manner.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how much of a comedy kind of story this was supposed to be.
It was a bit weird
because... he goes to the cab office, doesn't he?
He flounces off and he starts moaning at Tim about it. And then Will comes in and they have an argument. And they end up in a comedy tussle on the floor.
Well, Steve obviously can't because of his arm. And he starts let me at him, let me at him. He's like Scrappy-Doo, wasn't he? And
he was a bit. Everyone hates Scrappy-Doos, don't they?
Yeah, and then Tim comes in. And yeah, you're right.
Tim and Will end up in a headlock.
It was quite a funny fight.
It was hilarious.
It's like, I don't know whether I was supposed to be finding... I think you are supposed to find it funny. It was like, is this appropriate? I don't know.
I do feel a bit like you can't have that scene and then expect me to feel that Michelle is channeling the most dramatic scene of her acting career.
I know, it didn't gel together, and that's
part of the reason why Moaning Michelle will never work with Steve as a partner.
Comedy Steve. So Maria gets in on Michelle's side as well, doesn't she?
Moaning Michelle doesn't work. Michelle, as she was before all this happened, she was fine, wasn't she?
She'd gone through a period of being fine, but now she's just as bad as she always was.
Now she's Moaning Michelle again, it's not working.
Mm. She's got Maria on her side as well, and Michelle's trying to convince herself that she's in the right here, and Steve has been unreasonable.
It's his fault for not being
and it
here.
Doesn't take much to convince Maria of anything, does it?
Wow. Like,
marry me for a visa? Yeah, okay.
Whatever.
I'm the victim here. Yeah, you are the victim. He ain't the victim, you are, Maria says. So when Steve comes home...
I think she's being a bit sarcastic.
I don't think she was. I think she really thinks it. Backing up her homegirl, Michelle.
Yeah.
And Steve, because he comes home late, because he's been over at Tim's, hasn't he? And he has it out with Michelle. He says, I was fighting woman off in Spain, but I stayed true to you because of my vows. I can't quite believe that, anyway, this is where Michelle lets loose with the, you're not the victim here, Steve, I am. And then she walks off the room, and the look that Steve gives is like...
What?
How did you come to that then?
I honestly think he's given up dramatic acting for good now.
He can get into a... It's difficult to get out. He plays so much for laughs, doesn't he? And he's really good at doing that.
Yeah. But I think he's like, you know, that depression storyline, that's I'm not doing any more of that.
I don't want serious acting.
I don't see why they bother giving him any storylines like this, because... this was just a bit of a mess.
It was a little bit. It's like,
right, first of all, he was acting like it was comedy. She was acting like it's proper drama. Secondly, I don't really care who's in the right or wrong. I hate Michelle, and I think she was a trollop. And number three, I really don't get where her idea of she's the victim comes from.
Because Steve was away in Spain all this time and he didn't come back, he was just living the high life there.
No, but I've always thought, if you don't want to be with someone, dump them.
Well, they're not...
So much of this just nonsense and running around and not saying what you really think.
They are married, I mean, you can't just dump somebody that easily.
No, I would dump you.
What, if I ended up on the bed with some girl and then
I'd cut your balls off and then I'd dump you.
That's harsh, that's a bit rude for a podcast, Gemma.
All right, I'll cut your ears off and wear them like a necklace. And go, oh, you did buy me some more jewellery, thank you.
So we had a little bit on Wednesday, didn't we? Michelle's obviously miserable.
For some reason, Steve's not talking to her.
Steve's not talking to her anymore. And
well,
he's
Eva's
not
there.
Talking to Tim again.
Eve is there because she slept over with Aidan. Uh-huh. And she's trying to talk and Steve comes in and goes, oh, you're looking at the men on the computer. And she goes, no, I'm not, Steve, why are you being so mean? And then Eva's trying to defend her and Aidan comes in and is like, well, you are a bit massive slag, aren't you? And Michelle's like, I suppose so. Yeah, and Steve is talking to Tim and Tim's like, well, you need to let it go, mate, otherwise it's going to eat you up, isn't it? So Steve, in the end, Michelle begs Steve to speak to her. He says, are you lying about not sleeping with him? And she's like, oh, no, I would never do such a thing. Well, how... Believe me, why don't you believe me?
And Amy ends up having to come in and saying, look, stop fighting, you two.
Why are you being so horrible to
Steve
each other?
Steve kind of rushes her out, but then it suddenly kind of cut dead, isn't it?
This is what I mean about it not being a proper...
Yeah, it didn't feel like that was the end, but it was the end. And I'm totally on Team Steve with this at the moment. I would rather they made up. Now they're
me too.
Now they're married, and they had a nice period together where they kind of worked. She's no Becky, she's no Karen, but fine, they were good together. I'd rather they got back and I suppose it's the inevitable drama that always happens when somebody comes back after a long period away, isn't it? I just hope that it doesn't take long for her to realise that maybe she was in the wrong a little bit.
Oh, yeah, she just needs to let go of this idea that it was his fault that she ended up half naked on someone else's bed.
Mm. Yeah.
There are millions of people in this world whose spouse goes away for a while and they manage to stop themselves from shagging random people that they knew when they were 14.
Maybe she'll say what Sinead said to Chesney and she'll be like, right, you can go off and go half naked on the bed with any girl you want on this street and then we'll be even. Yeah, take your shirt
off and go roll around on Tracy's bed and it's fine.
Yeah. So, we'll find out more about that next week, I'm sure. Let's move on to the Connor Goner storyline. Leanne and Simon are back from Portsmouth, aren't they? They went there. I can't remember why. Was it to...
Anyone would go there.
Was it just for the it was just for the anniversary of Cal's death? They didn't want to be around the street or something, did they? And for some reason, Leanne doesn't know... She hasn't heard about all the stuff that's been happening with Callum and everything. She's like, have I missed everything and anything? And he was like, I'll fill you in later. Eva should have been texting Leanne and saying, OMG, you've got to get back here. Callum, you remember that Callum? He's just been dredged up from underneath Gail's manhole and all sorts. And yeah, Leanne didn't know that Carla and Nick's wedding hadn't gone through.
Well, sure, she goes, what happened at the wedding? And he was like, ugh.
Mm.
So Leanne says, oh, I will go and talk to Nick because there's no one he would rather see than me, Sunny Leanne.
And in other developments, Simon is becoming the next best chef in Weatherfield. Now that
after
Robert and Zidane, yeah, I mean, Simon, I do wonder whether it's supposed to be like Simon has got a bit of hero worship with Zidane, hasn't he? And he's liking well.
Kind of cute, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I can cook like my hero Zidane.
Yeah. Wasn't Peter supposed to be a good cook as well? I can't remember. I think so. I'm thinking of Kieran. So anyway, Leanne goes over to see Nick, who has now appeared after not... He'd be away for somewhere for a week, wasn't he? No one
says where he's been.
She tries to encourage him and says, look, why don't you try and get back to the bistro, get your share of the business back. Robert's reasonable.
Well, Nick goes, yeah, but he did sleep with my girlfriend to get my business by blackmail. Yeah, and Leanne's I'm sure it'll be fine.
Could you work with somebody who did that? I'd find it quite difficult.
Well, this is what annoys me. Nick and Leanne come storming into the bistro with Leanne just looking at Robert like he'd just done a crap on her shoes. And she's going, why are you doing this? What are you doing? Wouldn't you be like, whoa, hang on a minute. Excuse me, what's going on here? Where have you suddenly got this bee in your bonnet about this? Why is it my fault?
Yeah.
I didn't do anything.
She gets on a high horse very quickly.
The two people to blame for this nonsense is Carla and Tracy. Mm. I'm not with Tracy anymore, unless you had no ears. I'm just trying to do the best I can with this business that employs you.
I do feel sorry for Nick that he has lost everything, but them's the breaks.
Them's the breaks, and also he signed it away, and he's the one that decided that he didn't want to go to Cornwall. If I was Nick, I'd be like, you are staying here, Carla, you miserable bitch.
This and place I'm going to go... Because I'm sure it was Nick that was the one that wanted to move away originally to persuade Carla to go.
Well, anyway, it doesn't matter whose idea it was, maybe. But it was a restaurant. It was a business that he knew about, that he had bought.
Yeah, are we to believe that Carla is now running this restaurant somewhere in Devon?
Oh, let's not forget the woman who literally can't cook. Her ingredients list is a bottle of wine and a takeaway.
Or maybe
menu.
She's opening up as a wine bar or something like that now. Oh, I think that's what's supposed to have happened. I don't know.
What I mean. He's the one that's pissed his own livelihood up the wall here.
Mm.
He's got all the cash from this sale. It's not like he was ripped off and Robert stole everything. He's got the money and he invested it somewhere else and he decided he didn't want to go because he's so really sad. He let Carla... I would have made Carla stay in the street with everyone hating her and thinking she's an idiot. And I would have gone off to Cornwall by myself and had the double bed all to myself. That would have been the best part.
But anyway, he says, look, Robert, can we go back into partnership together? And later on, Robert decides, no. You can come back as my employee, though, and be a manager with Leanne. And he's like, no, I'm not having any of that. And neither is Leanne, who quits, which is a bit of a hasty decision.
Leanne's always quitting.
I don't really know what's in it for her quitting. And that is if she and Nick are supposed to now go and make their own rival bistro somewhere or something.
Well,
but
what an idiot. What is Robert supposed to do about this?
Hmm.
It's not his fault that Nick got screwed over by his wife and Robert's girlfriend, is it?
No.
So why would Robert pay for someone else's mistakes? I wouldn't. He's got a business. But the thing is, you're supposed to start to hate Robert now, because Robert spends all of his time on Wednesday being horrible to everybody. So he's horrible to Zidane, he's horrible to Steph, he's horrible to Andy.
Yeah, he's just, when he's stressed out, isn't he?
He's just setting himself up to say, oh, do you know what, Nick, I can't cope being in charge by myself, you can come back. Or, do you know what, Nick, I am a villain and I do deserve to be punished for no real reason apart from I'm the most boring character who works in the bistro, and that includes Leanne, can you believe it?
Yeah, I've got a feeling that Nick's going to go there and Robert's going to have his tail between his legs. But he doesn't know that it's Ramadan, and it's because he has a moan at Zidane for not tasting the food, doesn't he? I mean,
well, why is Zidane making food that tastes like crap and thinking that's okay because it's Ramadan?
You would have thought that he might have at least said to Robert, can't assume that everybody knows it's Ramadan and what that means. So really, Zidane should have said something to Robert
before he made a crap load of soup that tastes like crap.
Yeah, and then Robert's, yes.
What would you do if you're in charge of a restaurant and your chef suddenly can't cook because it's Ramadan?
I don't know. I mean, it must happen, mustn't it?
But I think usually you're better at cooking than that. The thing is that Robert's supposed to be the chef, but he's also trying to run the place.
Mm.
If he wasn't out trying to run the place and being shouting at everybody, he could be at the back actually tasting the things that Zidane made and going, no, mate, you need to put some more of this in, or, oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because Zidane can't do it by himself if he can't taste the food.
Mm. But anyway, that causes fireworks. Plus, Andy is back, hooray. Actually, I've not missed him at all particularly, and I was like, oh yeah, Andy's back. I'd rather he brought Michael back with him though.
Maybe Michael will be along soon.
I hope so. I don't know when he's supposed to come back at all. I've got no idea, but I kind of assumed that they'd come back together, and there was no real reason about why Andy came back apart from it's my birthday and I want to see lovely Steph for birthday, so happy birthday, Andy. But that I wanted to see the scene where Gail finds him, or he goes to find Gail and says, look, this is what the deal is with Michael at the moment, because I still like pining the lost love between those two characters.
They're really teasing us with this, aren't they? They're like, you know that they're going to get back together, but we're going to make you wait for the good stuff.
Wait.
I'm hoping that they're making us wait because the storyline's going to be more interesting than just they decide to get back together again.
I hope so, yeah.
Because if it's just let's get back together again, they could have done it months ago and it would have made perfect sense. Yeah. Apart from the fact that he's gone off somewhere.
Yeah, Les Dennis is off on treading the boards, isn't he? But I'm sure he's back filming again now. I'm just not sure when he's properly back.
Mm.
Anyway, Zidane goes over to Leanne's at the end of the episode and says, please come back. And she's like, no, not interested, but I'm happy you miss me. I'm glad to feel wanted. So, you know, I'm not that interested in it. Are they going to set up a rival business somewhere? Possibly.
I just think Robert's going to either fail miserably at running it and being a chef.
It doesn't feel right, Robert being in charge of the bistro, does it?
Well, they're making him to be horrible. He's not normally horrible like that.
Just stressed out.
I know he's stressed out, but you know what I mean? Sometimes they go, right, it's your turn to be a villain now. We're just going to change your personality and make you horrible to everybody so that people are glad that you either get your comeuppance and Nick gets the bistro back, or you just leave altogether.
Yeah, I can't remember what he said, but he did this really sarcastic line and a big silly grin the other day, didn't he? And it's like, I've never seen him do that.
Don't be such a plonker, Robert.
Mm. Right, Webster stuff. Oh, no, it was Craig. It was Craig and Tim. Yeah.
Everyone's favourite double team.
Tinker and Hooch. So Tim and Craig are up to something secret on Monday, and Sally comes round to get Sally's jacket.
Sophie comes round
to get Sally's jacket, but they won't let them in. And she can smell beer, and he's like saying, no, it's fine. So it later transpires that they've been doing some home brewing, which we've had a few times in Coronation Street before. Stan Ogden and Eddie Yates did a bit of home brewing in their bathtub once. Ernie Bishop has also made a bit of home brew. But
do a bit of that after a co, don't we?
Yes, we do indeed. And it's about time for another home brew storyline in Coronation Street. So they called it Brew Ha Ha or something, didn't they, I think?
Which silly.
Could have been a storyline.
That's probably already a bit. Well.
And I just quite enjoyed the role of Craig as the barkeep with like the towel over the shoulder, and he kind of cleaning the glasses almost. And he was like, being a sympathetic ear to Steve and says, I've lost my love too. Caitlin were her name.
Funny.
it's quite funny. And Craig, at the end of the episode, sneaks a couple of bottles under his coat. I can't remember whether Craig has drunk before, because he's got a big headache and a hangover the next day, and Beth, when she finds out what's happened, is aghast that her pure, precious little 17-year-old boy has had a sniff of the demon drink.
She would be proud.
Yeah, well, she's
just mad because he won't tell her where he got it from.
She also said something about she can't believe that he's taken it this badly because we're tinkers and we're supposed to have stronger stomachs than this. How many other tinkers do we know on this programme? Oh, there's her. There's Sinead,
who literally doesn't drink.
Yeah, doesn't drink, but when she does, she really can't hold it. So I think it's Beth that's the odd one out here.
I think this is a storyline about how strong the beer is, because they make a big deal about her saying, well, he only takes two bottles. He ends up with a massive hangover. She's demanding where he got it from, and says that line about we tinkers have got a strong disposition. Then she goes moaning at Tim about this, going, how did that happen? Because Craig finally admits, she keeps playing Saturday Night by Wigfield at him.
That was funny.
Craig finally breaks down and admits that he got it from Tim. And Tim says to Beth, I didn't give him any. And Beth's like, oh, you said he stole it, did you? I'm going to tell Sally of you. So Sophie placates her with some bottles of the beer to keep her mouth
shut. Works fine. Mum of the year, everyone.
Mum of the year, yeah. So I just wonder whether the alcohol is really high in this.
Yeah, and it's going to... What does that mean, though? Is it just people will get drunk, or is it
just
like...
Just get drunk faster.
The
alcohol content is just what percentage of alcohol is in it, and... The more, the higher the percentage. And normally beer is like 4% for like an average beer.
I think Sally might find out about this when she comes home on Sunday, don't you think?
I just don't know where it's going to go. Like, are they going to give people alcohol poisoning or something?
No, it's going to be some...
What's the point of
it? It's going to be some hilarious story. It's probably... You know, Corey likes to do a good comedic drunk storyline. I can imagine Sally trying a little bit and then... going off a red or something.
Well, because the thing
plastered
is...
Plastered over the front of the papers, local councillor.
Off a red.
Yeah.
I remember Tyrone bringing this up. No, sorry, Tim bringing this up to Tyrone before. And Tyrone was getting interested because he thought it was a good idea for a money spinner.
Oh.
And don't forget that Tyrone supposedly now has this taxi job, but he just shot a bloody... van into someone's house. So is his insurance going to go up for this taxi job?
Yeah, good point. I don't know how that kind of thing works.
I don't think they're going to sweep that under the carpet, but also Viz never got to wear that dress, and she certainly can't return it now, so that was a mistake,
whole disaster. Right, finally we just had like one or two scenes with Izzy, didn't we, on Monday, where
such a bizarre scene.
She's going into court because she ran over this copper's foot, and she has to go and tell Johnny because
she needs time off.
Yeah, she needs time off, but she doesn't want her to be sacked.
She needs to say, I've got to go to court. I think you have to. Do you really have to tell you?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Johnny's also got a bottle of this hooch, hasn't he? That he's swigging
at
the beginning.
I thought it was just scotch.
No, he goes and gets it from Tim. I think we see it at the beginning of the episode, yeah.
He's drinking on the job, and then she comes in to say, I'm taking marijuana for pain reasons, and now they're taking me to court. Which I think they did that very much on purpose to sort of show the contrast between, pardon me, how our culture views these two very kind of recreational drugs that are almost on a par with each other as to how much harm they do. Because you can't say alcohol is not harmful.
No. She also was making it very clear that now that she did it on purpose, running over this policeman's
car. I can't believe she said that.
Yeah, and she didn't. She didn't.
She was just
trying to get... Was she getting her pills or trying to get her something anyway?
She's trying to get her phone off him.
Yeah, she's making herself...
Look hard.
Look at me.
Why did she say that?
Weed and I'm well hard.
Yeah, I dissed the popos. All right, fam.
And but he even though he doesn't have Jenny whispering in his ear like he did last time, he's the lovely boss, and he says, "I'll suspend you for a week, and then you can have your job back
on full pay."
Unless you go to prison or something, then you might have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah. Tell you what, Izzy, when you go to court, don't say you did it on purpose when you didn't.
I am kind of looking forward to Izzy's court scenes next week just to see what a pigsy makes of it. Yes, I do smoke this. What's the problem? But I'm not guilty.
Your laws are stupid. I don't agree with this law.
Yeah.
That's silly. And also, can I just say, that drug dealer that got murdered on the street, he was mean. He deserved to be killed. Don't you guys get it? Ugh.
I'm going to imagine her like honour to be sent to prison and go on hunger strike or something like that.
Izzy really doesn't get. I think maybe she does know that she's on a soap. And she's like, laws don't apply to me. I'm a soap character.
I only follow soap law.
Soap law, I'm in the right here, okay?
I'm a goodie, honestly.
I mean, what happened to that time that Rita had that hash brownie? No one cared about that, did they?
That is true. Quite a lot of the times there have been cannabis stories on Coronation Street before it's been played for laughs.
Nobody's been in trouble about that. Just Izzy, because no one likes her. She gets in trouble.
Jack Duckworth had a cannabis plant accidentally at some point. So I think Mavis and Derek did as well.
It's always old people accidentally getting marijuana. It's like, you guys have been around long enough to know what you're doing. I don't believe for a minute you didn't know that.
So that was it on our mini little bit of Coronation Street this week. Do you have a character of the half week this week? It's a bit of a difficult one, this, isn't it? It might be Tim or...
I like Tim this week, yeah, with the fighting.
Or Billy?
No.
No, actually, because Billy's been horrible to Sean, isn't he? Yeah.
I just wish sometimes they would manage to make drama that wasn't misunderstandings and people not saying things that you just want them to say.
Mm. Yeah. Like, you only have to utter a few words and
all this would go away.
All fall into place. But... Oh, well. So, if we have Tim. Tim?
Tim.
Tim. Right. Now, coming up next is...
Very exciting.
Yes, an interview. We've got an interview. We spoke last weekend to Glenda yeah. Young from the Coronation Street blog, who has, you should know by now, has just released her book, The Little Book of Carla Connor, which I very much enjoyed when we went on holiday last week.
You read it so
my Kindle
quick.
Version. So we had a chat with her and found out about the book and her thoughts about Carla
all
and everything.
All kinds of things.
Yeah, so that's what's coming up next.
Secrets
15 minutes.
And stuff.
Enjoy, here it is. We're pleased now to be joined again by Glenda Young, who's recently released The Little Book of Carla Connor on ebook and in paperback. Glenda, welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That's no problem. It's always nice to talk to you. So can you give us a bit of an elevator pitch for your new book then for the listeners?
Yeah, the elevator pitch. It's a little book that you can hold in your hand, and it's all of Carla Connor's 10 years on Coronation Street in one book. So it takes you from the very first moment when she arrived at the underworld with two champagne bottles in her hand until she left last week in Johnny Connor's Jaguar.
Yeah.
So how did the project get started?
I thought that Carla deserved to have her time recorded on the street. Mm. So I went back through all of my Coronation Street weekly updates and pulled them all out, strung them together, and then tried to make a narrative out of all of it as well. And that was the really hard part. It was trying to make a story out of little bits of updates from every week.
Yeah,
but I got there in the end. It was tricky, but I think I got there.
Were there many gaps you had to fill in?
Yeah, there were a lot of gaps. And I've explained that in the front of the book, and I've said it because it's written by a fan, that there might be errors and omissions, and the timeline has been shortened. So I hope and I think I've got all of Carla's major storylines, but there certainly might be a few little ones that I've missed out.
Yeah, well, I read it last week, and it certainly seemed to have pretty much all the bases that I could remember covered anyway.
Oh, good.
Was it something you'd consider doing even before Ali announced she'd be leaving, or did her departure kind of spur you on to do it?
No, it was definitely the departure. To be honest, I haven't been a huge fan of Carla Connor all the time she was in Coronation Street, but when Alison King announced she was leaving, that's when it hit me that actually I'm really going to miss this character, because I don't think Coronation Street's had anything like her before. I mean, people compare her to Elsie Tanner, and I think that is probably the closest we've ever had to someone like Carla. And I don't think we'll see anyone like Carla again. Mm. So it was when Alison King decided she was leaving, and then it was publicly announced, and I thought, you know what, we need to capture that story because she's a one-off, and it really kind of hit home to me then. Mm. And I thought, actually, maybe I should have been paying more attention to Carla Connor in the time that she was on Coronation Street. So yeah. When I went back to do the book, that's when you realise the storylines that she's had have been absolutely fantastic. And she came in like a lion and went out like a bit of a lamb, really. Yeah. It's a bit of a... Bit of a shame, I thought, at the end.
Yeah, you said that she was considered a bit of an Elsie Tanner, and I saw at the end of the book you got a bit of a quote that calls back to Elsie's final lines on the street, the there's a question line. So it's a the comparisons.
I think
there,
because ITV didn't kill off Carla Connor, there is always the chance that, you know, she would come back, and I think she's certainly a strong enough character that fans would want to see her back. I know I would want to see her back sometime as well.
Oh, yeah.
So yes, so, you know, I'll put that famous line at the end of the book: will Carla ever be back on Coronation Street? Oh no, there's a question. Which is what Elsie Tanner said when she left Corrie.
Yeah.
So what is it you think about Carla that makes her such an iconic character?
I think just because she was the first woman to run the factory.
Mm.
And I know the businesses in Coronation Street are generally kind of run by the women, the pub and the salon and the cabin and so on. But the factory was very much a male domain, and Carla came in there, and she didn't feminize it in any way. And what I mean by that is she didn't soften it. It was still a very hard-working business, and she got the most of that she could out of our workforce. She proved her worth in a kind of a man's world. And I don't think anyone's really done that before in Corrie.
Yeah.
And she was still the most glamorous, one of the most glamorous characters that they've ever had. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when she came in, I thought, they're not going to be able to replace Mike Baldwin. He's always going to be the main guy of the factory for me. But she's done just as good a job as him, I think. Do you think she compares favourably to him?
I think she does in terms of being a very complex soap character who was... kind of an alpha soap character as well. She was definitely the alpha female of Coronation Street, and Mike Baldwin was alpha male, most definitely.
Mm, yeah.
So what's been your favourite Carla story when you were going over all your notes? What stuck out to you as something that was your favourite part of Carla's story?
I think my personal one was when she was going after Liam Connor, and that whole relationship, because Liam... was a soulmate, and he was the one person that she really loved. And there's just some fantastic scenes. When I went back to do it all, there's a fantastic scene, I don't know if you remember, when Liam actually went ahead and married Maria, and Carla tried to stop him from doing so on his wedding day, and she sent him a text message, and then Maria finds out about this. So anyway, she goes ahead and marries Liam. And then afterwards, she collars Carla in the ladies' toilet, and she has a real go at Carla, and Maria's got the upper hand, and there's not many people gets the upper hand with Carla Connor. I think Tracy did towards the end, which was a shame.
Yeah,
but Maria
definitely
really laid into her, and there's just this beautiful scene, which I've captured in the book, and she tells Carla to leave Liam alone, and tells her that, you know, she knows that she sent Liam a text on his wedding day, and how sad is that? And she storms out, and gives Carla kind of something to think about. But I think that's probably one of my most favourite storylines, because Liam and her were kind of meant to be together, but were never destined to stay together, because obviously they killed him off in the end.
Mm. Would you say that Liam was, out of all of the boyfriends and husbands that Carla has had, would you say then that he's the one she's been best suited to?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, to be honest, in my opinion, he was the only one that she was suited to. I don't think any of the others really matched up to her. I don't think any of them were good enough for her. And certainly not Nick Tilsley.
I was
never
gonna
was
say,
a fan of Nick and Carla.
What did you think of their relationship?
I thought it was very one-sided. It was lopsided. It wasn't equal. Carla was very much in charge.
Mm.
And to kind of, I don't know, it just felt like they were... They'd obviously softened Carla over the years to make her kind of more appealing generally, and which I didn't like. I liked her having that rough edge to her, because you want something gritty about a soap character. You want that, you know, like you want that rough diamond. You don't want it all nice and cuddly. I don't anyway.
No, definitely.
I just felt they'd softened her too much, so that when they put her together with Nick, who for me is a complete wet blanket, it just didn't feel right. It just felt completely lopsided. And I think that when she left, the whole ending, when she was driven off the cobbles in her dad's car, Oh, I would have liked to have gone off on a high and been driving herself.
I was going to say, she could at least driven the car herself, couldn't she?
Exactly. She could have gone off with the wind in her hair and the top down and in a sports car.
Yeah.
Throwing some Preston's petals at Tracy or something. That would have just been the best.
Yes, that would have been perfect. If she'd gone off in a flurry of petals from the ripped up bouquets that Tracy had given her. That would have been brilliant.
You two should be writing Coronation.
She definitely lost some of her pizzazz in the last year, and it was partly with Nick, but it was the argument and the fallout with Tracy and everything as well, and that just seemed to dominate, and Tracy always seemed to be on top of that, didn't she?
Yeah, and that never rang true for me. It sounds like I'm being very negative about Coronation Street, but it's just because I'm kind of been concentrating on Carla for so much that all of these things are forefront in my mind at the moment. But it just seems that Tracy, you know, she killed two people in that fire and it's just been forgotten about. And so then, you know, she gets the upper hand on Carla, and you just, at the back of your mind, you're thinking, yeah, but you should be, you know, when's your comeuppance going to happen? When are you going to get it, Tracy? And it just didn't feel right somehow that she was getting the upper hand with Carla.
Makes you wonder whether the Nazirs are going to have anything to do with the downfall of Tracy at some point.
Oh, do you think so?
Well, it's just the way that they keep going on about Cal, and they seem to be on the warpath a little bit. Well,
yes, me.
Yeah, she definitely seems to be not one to forget something so quickly, and not happy about Tracy. But maybe now Tracy's been a bit cowed by Carla's leaving, I think. Maybe she'll back off a bit. But I would like to see Tracy get the comeuppance from the Nazirs.
It's either going to be her or Jenny's going to get her own back, isn't she? Because it looks like Jenny might be being a sort of the new rival in the wings.
Mm.
Yeah. I think one of my favourite scenes in that whole episode where Carla left, that whole week that we had, the big week, was Jenny Bradley dancing around the factory when Tracy was locked inside the storeroom. We just burst out laughing. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
It was. That was one of my favourite scenes. So what impact do you think Carla's exit is going to have on the street now?
Well, obviously it leaves a hole at the factory, but I think she hadn't been seen in the factory for a couple of weeks, so that kind of eased her out. We saw Johnny and Aidan, perhaps with Kate as well. I think the factory is going to be pretty much looked after. The Platts have already moved into a flat, so it's like they're just acknowledging she's gone, we move on, we do something else. And all of the soap magazines this week, so I'm not revealing any spoilers because it's all out there in the shops, the soap magazines, and I'm looking at one now, I've got the TV Times in front of me, got Nick and Leanne on the front, so we know Nick's going to move on.
No!
it's like, you know, what will happen? Where will Carla's leaving be felt? Roy will certainly feel it, but he's moving on now. He's going to get married to Kathy. So it's like they've lost such an iconic character, so instead of dwelling on it, they're just, as is the way that soaps are, they're just moving on very quickly indeed.
Yeah, Coronation Street, when they want to get rid of a character, it usually does happen kind of quite quickly, and then sort of within a week, and then it's gone. And
it's like a guillotine.
Maybe a phone call the next week, and that's about it, isn't it?
I think when Hayley died, and obviously when Deirdre died as well, they still get mentioned every now and then because they were so well loved by the characters on the street and by the fans and everything. And it'll be interesting to see if Carla gets mentioned a year down the line. I do wonder if that might happen.
I mean, a year ago, I would have said she'll leave a massive hole. You know, I can't believe they would get rid of her, and she's such a massive part of the show, and she'll be mentioned for years to come. And the way that she's been portrayed in the last few months, I think they kind of felt like they were priming us to kind of say goodbye, like trying to make it less painful almost.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, the Connors are, like you say, looking after the factory for now, aren't they? So I guess there'll always be the odd mention from them.
Yeah, and I must admit, I do like the Connors. I think Johnny Connor's fantastic. He's got that old style Mike Baldwin-ness about him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he does.
And Aidan Connor, I think he's fantastic. He's doing a lovely job. He's very nice to watch as well, I must admit. So I think the Underworld Factory using the same hands, unless Jenny Bradley knows different.
Well, yeah, I think Johnny is definitely our favourite of the Connors as well, isn't he? You know?
Yeah, he's definitely warming. I'm warming to him, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be quite interesting to see if this goes further with Jenny, and then she kind of
becomes the bosses dame of the factory.
That Sally won't be happy with that.
No.
No, she won't.
So, do you see the three other Connors staying in the show and in the factory for the long term then?
Yeah, it seems like they're positioning them that way, doesn't it? It's and because there is something familiar about Johnny Connor, because he's got that old style, that old school style about him. He fits in really well, and Aidan seems to be there for the duration. So yeah, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be kept on Coronation Street for a long time to come. Mm. Obviously, there's Kate Connor as well, so we'll see how that pans out.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're kind of still in the middle of that story, aren't they?
You just never know what's going to happen, do you?
No. Well, look, it's been really lovely speaking to you again. Just before we go, have you got any other Corrie book projects coming up that you can tease for us?
Well, there is something coming. I've been asked not to say too much about it, but it is an official ITV Coronation Street book that's going to be out later this year. And that's all I can say, unfortunately, other than it's a huge amount of fun. Fans will absolutely love it. I'm so excited.
Well, that's a great tease. And I did love your Deirdre Life on the Street book as well.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
So, looking forward to another official one with all the gloss that comes with that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you again. It's been great talking to you.
Okay, thank
good luck with good luck with the book. Hope everybody who's interested in Corrie and Carla gives it a download or a buy, because it's definitely worth reading.
Yes.
Great. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
And just a shout out as well to Joe Blakely, who designed the cover for me, because the cover is absolutely stunning. Yeah.
It is. We thought it was great.
She
always does a good job. Right, see you then.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
It's the cabin, it's the news.
Yes.
So much news.
No, there isn't much news.
Oh, there's loads. There's not much news at all.
We're going to start off our news with what's going on with this blimmin' football ruining Coronation Street scheduling.
Football
next
ruining?
Next week is the weirdest... Corrie ruining football.
Yeah.
The weirdest schedule I've ever seen. So we've got an episode on Sunday first, and that's going to be an hour long.
Is that this Sunday?
That is this Sunday. That is tomorrow after, 2 days' time, but tomorrow for when the podcast is released. Then Monday, we've got 2 half-hours of Corrie, as normal. Tuesday, we've got an hour.
I don't think I can cope for 3 hours worth of Coronation Street in 3 days. I think it might kill me.
See, even though it's a short week, it's actually more Corrie than it would be in a normal week. It's bizarre.
I don't like it.
And then after that, the next episode isn't until the following Sunday, when I think it's an hour again. And then, there isn't one. The Monday afterwards.
Don't
so
even start off.
It's very...
How many countries are there in Europe that can possibly play football against one another?
I don't know.
Surely it's over in 2 weeks.
I long for when the Coronation Street results were put up on the football screens, like when Ken and Deirdre were back together again.
Those are the good old days, aren't they?
Yeah, and then they would interrupt the football for Corrie.
Yeah, that's not the other way around. we'll be kicked out in a couple of weeks anyway, and then they should stop showing it.
Oh, yeah.
No one wants to watch it after we've been kicked out.
That is true. No, next up, we've got Catherine Tilsley and Katie McGlynn and Tisha Mary have been doing some good old charity work.
This is so amazing. I would love to have done this. It looked really cool. They did a 50-kilometre endurance trek through Brecon Beacons in Wales.
It's called Trekfest, which sounds like some kind of science fiction convention.
I'm surprised it hasn't been taken by a science fiction convention, but no, it is to do with walking around.
I couldn't do this, blimey.
Well, we walked quite a lot when we were in France. We probably did 50k.
No, we did not. 50 kilometres endurance trek through the Beacons in Wales.
They raised £10,000.
Very tired afterwards. Yeah, it was them. They were in a team. They were in Team Vital. It was for the Joshua Wilson Brain Tumour Charity and Parkinson's UK. So Catherine, who was obviously the
super fit
one of the group, took 12 hours to do it. I couldn't walk for 12 hours. I just get bored.
How long
same as 50k?
They were probably all right, actually. They probably had Conversations Street on their iPods to listen to.
I wonder how many glorious episodes of Conversations Street.
Like 6 or 7 episodes you can get through on that.
Oh, brilliant.
But the other two, Katie and Tisha, took 15 hours to do this.
So that just goes to show me that they did not walk together, which makes me think maybe they all hate each other.
Well, apparently Katie and Tisha has they've got closer and they've bonded a bit more over this. Katie McGlynn has said, "I'm so proud of everyone on our team for doing the track fest. Tots underestimated how tough it was going to be." So it was. It sounds very difficult, and they should feel very proud of themselves. I do hope they had, and I hope they had a nice cup of tea or something when they got home, or something a bit.
They probably had a flapjack.
So well done to them.
That and, is, by the way, I just looked it up. It's 31.6 miles.
That sounds like a very long.
So longer than a marathon.
Right. Shane Ward has been speaking to the Star recently. I think it was last weekend, and he.
Which one's that?
Shane Ward, it's me, Aidan Connor.
Aidan, okay.
Yeah, he says, "I can't say a lot," because he was asked about what's going on with Kate Oakes being in charge of the show. "I can't say a lot, but there are some big stunts coming up. Now we have a new producer who was with Corey, then went to Emmerdale, and now she's back. Things again, things are looking amazing. I keep saying to her that I'll be down for any big stunts that come my way, so hopefully I'll get in on the action soon." Now, Kate Oakes, being from Emmerdale, and Emmerdale is the soap of stunts, and Kate Oakes is the one that orchestrated the big helicopter crash last year, among other things, I'm sure. And when we watched at the beginning of the Soap Awards, and they'd always show the clips of "this is what you've missed this year," and from what I saw of the helicopter crash, it just looked pretty amazing.
There's only so many things you can have crashing about.
Well, I know. I think it's easier in Emmerdale because there's the whole village. There's a farm, there's the fields, there's lots of places where disasters can happen.
You can have exploding cows and things.
I think probably out of all the soaps...
Foot and mouth disease.
I think out of all the soaps, Corey has probably got the less space to do these things in. Because EastEnders has got the whole square. And I don't know anything about the geography of Albert Square, but I assume it's a little bit bigger. I don't know where Hollyoaks is.
They've even got little parks. Exactly. And stuff.
But Corey has got literally one road and another expanded Victoria Street and everything. But where hasn't there been a disaster in Coronation Street? I mean, the factory's had more than its
loads.
Fair share. The Beast are obviously having tram week.
Rovers caught on fire.
Rovers has. The shop has.
The
gym hasn't, but I don't know whether it's too soon for
Bistro,
some kind of...
several people died.
Yeah. The flats. The brewery just round the corner, which there's
that
a big gate
explode.
There. That could explode. That could be quite exciting. There's also the medical centre, and I don't know whether anything's happened in that building before.
I just had a brilliant idea.
What?
A zombie outbreak at the medical centre.
That could
or
be
Zika,
good.
Or whatever how it's pronounced, or Ebola.
Yeah.
Or bird flu.
Yeah.
Or
some kind
combination of all those
in
things.
The medical centre. But that's not really a stunt, is it? A stunt involves something crashing into something else, but in my mind.
I tell you what, I thought that Kathy...
Oh, excuse me, that was a sneeze.
...did a pretty good stunt, going sideways into the wall.
Yeah, no.
And then the next day is fine. What a trooper.
What other stunt could there be? So we want to have some kind of medical centre stunt... We can't have I don't want to have a tram crashing into anything. I don't want a car crashing into anything.
Gas mains explosion.
That was what caused the tram crash, though, wasn't it?
No one remembers that. No one cares.
No one remembers about that bit. They can't have a helicopter crash because that's just copying Emmerdale.
Plane crash.
So,
Lockerbie disaster.
I do not know what there can be a stunt of. Are you happy to see more stunts in Coronation Street?
Yeah.
Or is it a bit too kind of sensational?
No, I like it. I like death.
You can't have them every day, otherwise they just get a bit...
Should be everyday occurrence.
No, they can't be every day, because then you get a bit bored with them.
That'd be fine.
Even this whole thing that was the stunt on the big week this week, the car going into the annex, that seemed... Yes, I know. What's wrong with you at the moment?
Nothing.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. We enjoyed it at the time, but it seems like it was over and done with really quickly, wasn't it? We didn't get to see long-lasting effects of this. I mean, obviously Callum has been uncovered... But
I tell you what they should do.
What?
They should have Matt LeBlanc crashes the car filming an episode of Top Gear.
Just happened to be on Coronation Street.
Going around
into the medical centre.
Into the medical centre, and then Dr. Matt has to come back.
Okay. That's
and then Blue Merrick appears and goes,
who wants to get married on their deathbed?
Now, like how can Shane Ward, I mean, Aidan, sorry, be involved in this? Because if he wants to be in the sun.
He's a top geezer. He just happens to be walking along and is so altruistic, he can't help himself but to pull people from the rubble using his burly arms.
See, if you were a storyliner and you wanted a stunt involving Shane Ward, Aidan Connor. I don't imagine that Aidan would come out alive of this stunt, would he?
Oh, look, oh, do you know what?
Parachuting thing with using let's have all the factory girls sew a massive parachute out of knickers. And I'm gonna jump out of a plane and I don't think he'd quite land safely there.
You wanted a stunt, what can I say, Shane?
Eva lies down on the ground and said, just land on me massive boobs and you can bounce off.
Bounce off into something soft like Beth's arse.
Sadly, misses it.
That was just horrible.
That was disrespectful and horrible. Gemma, you're terrible.
I hang my head in shame. Let's go on to feedback where people will say nice things about us and make us feel better about ourselves.
Okay.
It's feedback time. Tivor has got an email she sent us and she said, there's a big plot hole. Colin's empty flat appears to have a spare room. Also, I heard someone reference on the day the Platts moved in. There had been a spare room in Colin's flat. Carla would never have to have slept on the sofa and let Amy have her bed. There's a spare room for her to sleep in, even if she did let Amy have her bed rather than sleep in a spare room. And I don't believe Gail would really want to sleep in Carla's flat, considering how she feels about her, and Nick's own flat is just next door.
I don't think there's a big deal about Gail sleeping there, but I think, yeah, I think you're right about the spare room.
That was silly.
Although, you know, when the flat burned down and it was remodelled again, maybe they...
Oh, look, love, we found
an extra bit of space. Tell
you what, if we get rid of all these handbags in this room, you've got room for a bed in here. And she goes, oh, amazing.
I'm sure that if they were asked, that's what they would come up with, something like, oh, when it was remodelled.
It's you can remodel apartments to have extra rooms, Michael.
But you can chop something in half, can't you? I don't know, can you do that?
You can chop things in half, yeah.
Yeah, so there you go.
I can see how Sarah would blame herself. She was the one that called Callum to the house that night and then tried to film him, which set his temper off. If he hadn't attacked her, Kylie wouldn't have had to hit him.
Mm. Yeah. She's
well, she's wrong to blame herself.
It's understandable. Callum was the wrong one, wasn't he?
I think women are quite good at blaming themselves for things that go wrong.
If they're being attacked, like you hear about women who are raped
victim
and things.
Complex and stuff. And yeah.
Oh, wish I had to tell you all about that.
Oh, God. It's hardly surprising considering how many female victims get blamed for their own crimes that get committed against them.
Mm.
Like, oh, you shouldn't have been wearing that or saying that or looking at that person or walking here or whatever.
Mm.
Anyway, Devor carries on. Bethany had no friends not that long ago, but I guess the gossip was better than bullying her. I don't understand why she didn't even have organised a party for herself in the first place if she didn't have friends, or not many. Has bullying stopped all of a sudden, or are we going to get another round?
I feel as we are going to get another round of this. They cast the main girl and her mum, and they got some story about how she's linked to higher up people at the school, and it's going to come round again.
I think
it should be over by now, but it's not.
Well, the thing about school when I was a kid is there were so many different groups of people, and I don't think schools as like cliquey in this country as it is in like America.
Oh, no, I don't think it's as bad as
there's
America,
no hierarchy.
Pretty
no, but there's no hierarchy. Like, there's like
the jocks.
Like, from what I've seen of TV shows, you would believe that there was this kind of like set social hierarchy in American schools, whereby if some of the popular kids didn't like somebody, that nobody else would like them. But when I was at school, it wasn't like that at all. There were kids that were more popular than other kids.
Yeah.
But if they didn't like somebody or they were bullying them, no one would really care.
I don't buy that Bethany hasn't got any friends at all at school.
And I don't buy that if she was being bullied, that would have an effect on whether people liked her or not.
No, I know, exactly. Anyway.
I think T-Ball's right there. I think gossip, a lot of people were just there to be like, ooh, did you hear? I would go to a party.
Go and have a look at the people who've been accused of murder.
Yeah, go and gawp at it. Go, which one's the one that killed him?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be awesome?
It's a real murder mystery party, isn't it?
I'm actually surprised that they didn't have any kind of, like, story. They could have just had a little thing in where somebody was there
taken photos and sold them to the Gazette or something. That would have been amazing.
Or kind of gone round with their sound recorder app and just like just listened it down.
In on Sarah, like just confessing to everybody.
If somebody had done that, they would have struck Field gold, day. Wouldn't they? They would have found what happened.
Could have sold that to the Sun, probably.
Yeah.
Yep. So she finishes off with, Chesney has a history of overreacting to a mere kiss. He ruined his relationship with Katie over her first kiss with Ryan, convinced Katie was having an affair, and it was totally innocent at that point.
Yeah, that is true, actually. Chesney has... I mean, it's not surprising, because he always manages to bag these gorgeous girls somehow, and he's very charm. Insecure about being able to keep them, so...
He's... Maybe you don't punch over your weight so much, Chesney, and then you wouldn't worry about it.
Mm. Thank you for your email, Tivor. I'm going to read Rebecca's series of tweets out now, and she said that she enjoyed last week on the street. She thought Sarah was the character of the week and enjoyed all of Tina's performances. I agree with Gemma as well. I think Tony could be implicated. Ah, yes, you're correct. And I'm excited how it could pan out. I also think Chesney should have told Sinead about the cheek kiss. As it's soap law, Sinead will find out, and it's not about the kiss, but the fact Chesney kept the truth away from Sinead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm delighted that Roy and Kathy got engaged, and I love the scene where Roy gave the ring to Kathy. It was just so cute and I wanted to see more of that this week. I could have done with a bit more of that and a bit less of, I don't know, Izzy or...
Anything.
Yeah.
Michelle.
I always want to see more Roy and Kathy. Zidane and Rana, Rebecca says, I don't really care about them as a couple. Sorry for going on about it so much last week there, Rebecca. But I would like to see Rana stop in and maybe Zidane get a girlfriend that respects his beliefs. Finally, enjoyed our report on the British Soap Awards and all of our reactions to the Corrie stars. Hopefully you can get to go again next year.
They won't let us back, no. they've got restraining orders yeah. against us.
No, I think next year it's probably going to be back in Manchester again. I think they're alternating.
Are they?
Well, I think 2 years ago it was in London. Last year it was in Manchester, so I'm just kind of assuming it's Manchester again.
You think they would have organised it by now?
I hope that it is in London, because I would love to go back again, because it was very, very cool. Right, who's written this next email coming up? It's Christina.
She says, Hi, Michael and Gemma. I'm not sure what it is, but that woman detective is really irritating me.
Yeah, this is the one we were talking about earlier, the overactor.
I can't put my finger on why. I can't make my mind up if it's the actress herself or the character that is irritating me so much. Every time she comes on screen, I get the urge to punch the television. Tell me I'm not alone.
I don't think that that she has a character apart from kind of hard-faced policewoman, and that's literally the extent of her character description, and the actress has just decided to portray her in this kind of...
No, this actress is, I have got my shot on TV. Who knows if I'm going to be on TV again? I'm going to prove to everyone who didn't believe me that I can act.
It makes her stand out, I suppose, even if only a little bit.
She says, I'm actually starting to feel a bit sorry for Amy. I think that Michelle and Steve are making her feel unwanted. I don't understand why they've been so eager to get her to go back to Tracy. It didn't have come across like they were doing it for Tracy's sake, just their own selfish reasons. I think that Steve hasn't been a great dad to her recently, and it's about time he stepped up.
Yeah, especially as he abandoned her for 6 months.
I think so too. You're right. I think he needs to be
bloody nice. He needs more quality time. They need to go to Centre Parks together or something.
If Amy does turn out to be a horrible, frightful nightmare, it's partly down to the fact that Tracy's influence, but partly down to Steve being a horrible dad.
Yeah, and Michelle, of course. We can always blame Michelle for something.
Blames was probably her fault.
Amy's the victim in this, not Michelle.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what their conclusion of this will be.
Maybe.
The real victim in this is the children. Won't someone think of the children?
No one thinks of the children. She says, I thought that the episode where Steve found out about Michelle and Will was hilarious. I just kept thinking to myself that this episode should not be funny. One of the funniest scenes for me, it was in the cab office when Tim took on Will.
See, that's the one that I think was supposed to be funny.
No, I don't know, but why then follow it up with...
Yeah.
Because when they had the Steve and Tim having a fight with Will, and there was all this comedy stuff, and then Steve was gurning and everything, I thought, oh, okay, this is kind of over then. Steve's just going to forgive her and sort of say, well, you've got to make it up to me. And she'll go, oh, Steve, and he'll kind of, like, do that little smug face where it fold your arm, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then that will be the end of it. But then they came back the next episode with full-on victim wailing and gnashing of teeth from Michelle.
Yeah.
I think they messed up the direction.
It's not quite right, is it?
Whoever's in charge of that, let
Steve go a bit too far one way and Michelle go the other way and didn't really reconcile.
Yeah, didn't really meet in the middle.
Not really. Anyway, she continues, how old is Craig supposed to be? He's obviously under 18 because he's legally not allowed to drink. I thought that by now he would have moved on from helping Tim with the window cleaning. I've always seen Craig as ambitious and have high hopes for him.
Well, he's still doing his, he's still at school, isn't he? He did his GCSEs last year, which you do when you're 16. So he is in the school year where you turn 17. I can't remember whether he's had his birthday this year or not, but let's say he's 17, so only just under 18. But
I never really saw Craig as that ambitious. I thought Chesney was the ambitious young man of the street, and now he works in a kebab shop, so what does that tell you?
Yeah,
Let's not forget.
I've never seen Craig as hugely ambitious. I mean, he is with his arse, I suppose, but
with his arse.
Art.
Oh.
How can you be ambitious with your arse?
What are you?
Don't know. Say.
Ask Beyonce. Okay. Let's not forget the most ambitious man to ever lived on the street.
Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
She's
exactly.
The most ambitious.
She broke the internet. She
balanced a champagne bottle on that arse.
Glass.
Oh, it's just a glass, isn't it? Oh, yeah. Right.
Anyway, the most ambitious man to have ever lived on the street is Ken Barlow. And what has he ever done?
Yeah,
nothing.
You just see what ambition gets you in Coronation
Street. He had a
floozy
on a barge
Nothing.
Boat and that's about as great as it got. She says, I am really unhappy with all the schedule changes because of the football. I want it to be over already so we can go back to normal. At one time, they used to do adverts when there was any change to Coronation Street schedule, but they don't seem to bother anymore. If it wasn't for the Coronation Street blog, I wouldn't have any idea when it was on.
I think it's because these days, like, people have got it, if you watch Corrie or whatever, you've got it on Series Link and you just hope for the best. And if it doesn't record, you think, oh, football.
I wonder what Gav's doing.
Yeah, my dear great aunt. She's probably turned it on and it's like, what the heck is going on here?
Oh, they're doing some kind of Coronation Street football thing.
Yeah, Weatherfield County, which side are they? There aren't any teams wearing
green
here.
I don't know which ones to cheer for.
Yeah, it's pretty bad because I don't think... I mean, they'll probably have at the end of the episode, the next episode of Coronation Street is on Sunday, but I think people don't stay and listen to the credits, do they? We certainly don't.
I wonder how this affects the Canadian schedules too.
Yeah,
because in theory, the way they're doing it, they could almost just carry on as normal. It would make more sense if they did that.
I think roughly we're getting the same amount of Coronation Street, though, aren't we? So
that's what I mean.
Yeah, it's probably, hopefully, not affecting them too much.
I'd love to live in Canada because you don't have to worry about it then, and also you can have all these big Corrie stars come over and fawn over you.
Yeah, that is the benefit of living in Canada, isn't it? And all the trips you can go on and everything. Right, last thing.
And you get to eat maple taffy.
Our last message is from Michael. That is right, we've had something called Michael write into us, which made me chuckle. We haven't had a Gemma ever, have we?
No.
Don't think so. Or have we? I don't know. Anyway, Michael says that he loves our weekly podcast. Now that Hulu has abruptly dumped Corrie from its programming with no explanation, Corrie fans in the US have been left scrambling to keep up. Your in-depth and highly entertaining weekly recaps help so much. Oh, thanks. In fact, we started a Facebook group. Yeah, he's emailed us. No, he got us on Facebook to tell us about a Facebook group that he's set up, which is if you go to facebook.com/groups/CorrieUSA, then there's about 60 people or so last time I looked the other day. It's where they get around and have a moan and talk about Corrie with other fellow American Corrie lovers. So if you are that way inclined, as in American, and you like Corrie as
I
well.
I don't think it's an inclination. I think you get born there.
Get
or
born
you
that
move
way.
There.
Go and join the Facebook group and then you'll find
why don't you move
like-minded
to Canada?
Souls. Yeah, exactly. You could just go up a bit.
What about Trump?
Yeah, is it going to be Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump this year?
If you're into Trump, that's fine. But if you're not into Trump, I think even Trump fans would agree, if you don't like Donald Trump, you're scared of Donald Trump, it seems to me.
See,
yes, it is. Because
that's a pretty amazing.
Donald Trump's
it?
been nominated as the Republican candidate,
yeah.
And now
Hillary
is the Democrat because Bernie Sanders is kind of stuck in nowhere, really.
I don't want to go into politics or anything on this podcast, but it's actually quite interesting, isn't it?
Well, listen, we can't talk.
A nut job.
This is the trouble. No. This is the trouble with having all the politics being decided in the silly season. Everyone's crazy over summer, and all this news story is just full of nonsense. So why not decide two of the most important things in two of the, like,
most powerful nations in the world. Let's have the American nominations for president. Let's just shove that in somewhere and everyone's gone crazy with the heat. And let's just ask the British people whether they want to be in the EU or not, because apparently that's a totally reasonable question to ask people.
I'd always quite like to be in a political environment where you can get that passionately in favour of the people that could be running the country. Like, when we have our elections here, it's like David Cameron, nobody really likes him, versus whoever it is in charge of the Labour Party, nobody really likes him. And it's like, oh.
Jeremy Corbyn.
And they're the best of the bad bunch, really, is it? But here, like, you're going to have people fervently fighting for Hillary and Trump.
I don't think anyone has been really enthusiastic about anybody to be Prime Minister since Tony Blair.
Yeah.
When Tony Blair did that video of him with balloons, and everyone's like, balloons!
Things can only get better.
I love balloons and pop music. Yes.
But yeah, politics is just so boring in this country. But yeah, a woman versus Donald Trump.
Why do you keep saying a woman as though that's just because as crazy as a donkey? Thing.
No, because it's not crazy. I think it'd be amazing.
A woman.
A woman as a president.
Oh, we tried that once. Never again.
Yeah. Hopefully she'll do a bit better job than Thatcher. I'll come up with a better reputation.
Well, the Queen's been doing it fine for years. So.
Yes, good old Queen. Happy birthday, Mum. You're 90 again this week. Happy official birthday.
90 again. Everyone loves me. I'm 90 again.
She is just going to keep on going, isn't she? I hope so.
Don't laugh about it. If she ever dies, I'll cry. No.
Right, we've gone way off topic with this, and we said it'd be a short episode, and just checking the time.
No, it's not.
It's, fairly short.
What do you mean?
Yeah, it's fairly short compared to normal ones. An hour and 35 odd, yeah. That's...
All right, whatever.
Right, Gemma. How can people contact us?
You want to tell us how deeply we've insulted you because you are a fan of women or Donald Trump. Or the EU.
I want Hillary Clinton to it.
Or whatever. Email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com. Why not tell us how you're voting in the referendum?
You may also say about Coronation Street.
Oh, yeah, we know. Yeah. No, we know. We've got enough opinions about that. You can find our website at conversationstreet.podbean.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, you can Skype us, you can tweet us, you can find us on Facebook. If you're Donald Trump, why don't you Skype us and say that we can make Britain great again? Or say something about Coronation Street.
Yeah, I bet he likes a bit.
Give us a sound bite. We'll vote for you in the election.
Yeah, very famous people want to give us a Skype. We will definitely endorse you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're Boris Johnson or whatever your name is, don't like you. Yeah. No, okay. He's all right as a person.
Anyway, we're going to go now because we're watching Big Brother. I made Gemma watch Big Brother.
I actually hate it. I'm going.
This year's Big Brother, the people on it don't. I hate seem them. That
I'm
great,
going. Goodbye.
Bye. See ya. The music for this episode came from podcastthemes.com.